Hey, Black and Jew Podcast, episode 29.
Yep, 29.
29.
We got a great guest, John Gregory, on today.
Yes.
You guys really have 29 podcasts?
This is our 29th episode,
we have,
man.
29 podcasts,
29
yes.
weeks, 29 episodes.
Wow. This is very special for me. I'm glad to be here.
I'm glad that you're here, John Gregory. Do you feel like you deserve to be here?
Looking around, you know, at the equipment, no, but at the room, yeah. I mean, this is about where I'm at. I think that's right.
I love that John Gregory sarcasm. You can't get away from it, right?
Yeah, I'm a prick.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, podcast listeners, if you don't know John Gregory, he's extremely tall. And I was thinking about when you came in, I was going to put the microphone stand really high.
Oh my God.
Like comically high. So you're going to be like, whoa, what's this? I'm not that tall, guys. And then we'd all laugh.
Oh, like every host at every show I've ever done, ever.
Isn't that hilarious?
Yeah,
that
is hilarious.
That's such a great prop. It's like, oh my God, let me get a quick laugh. And you haven't seen the comedian yet, but this will work for him. He'll get it.
Lisa said that her first time she did comedy like this, the host put it really high. Or no, she was at one of those stand-up classes, and the teacher was like, hey, how about when you do it for the first time, put the stand really high, have the host put the stand really high. So you're like, whoa, what's this microphone stand trick? My equivalent of that is when someone goes, co-host of the Black and Jew podcast, I'll let you guess which one he is. You know, I kind of understand, though, because I know sometimes, like, when I host, I'll say shit that I'm like, afterwards, I'm like, what the fuck did I say that? Just like in the moment, you know? Like, I remember I had a...
Just pandering.
Yeah, just like, just stupid shit. Like, I remember I...
But Lisa really took a comedy class?
Yeah, she did.
Okay, we'll continue.
Yeah, she did. And I was like, bring up Alex Mauricio, right? And I'm like, oh, here's Alex Mauricio. He's a doctor, believe it or not. I'm like, why the fuck did I say that? I'm like, that's for him. Like, it didn't fuck up his set. And he was cool with it, apparently. Maybe not. But, you know.
Because,
like,
he made a joke.
He's a doctor
you.
And a cunt. No, yeah. I'm
kidding. He made a joke about you having said that. Like, thanks. You fucked up all my shit.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, that's
but it's,
why
I
that
should,
worked.
But I, like, the fact but, is, I should not have said it. Like, it was a, like, that's up to him to bring up, you know?
The,
you know,
the visuals of that Alex Mauricio impression were very important. And I'm really sad that our listeners are going to miss out on that, right?
And I nailed it, didn't
I? How can you imitate an Italian person from the Bronx without gesticulations? You know what I mean?
It was the shoulder hunch that sold me, really.
Shoulder hunch. I got the fingers just wide enough. Alex Mauricio, if you're listening, I nailed it.
Yeah.
You know, whenever one of us goes up, they always use the same joke now. This person's from the Black and Jew podcast, and I'll let you guess which one he is.
Yeah.
Give it up for either Mike or Reggie, and then that's how everyone's introduced.
You guys are a comedy tandem now.
Really? Yeah. Cool. Daniel always does it.
Yeah.
What I think you did it once. Yeah, you did it at the JC Curious show.
See, the hosting thing, it gets to me, and I the crack under the pressure. You see what happened? It happened to you with Alex. It happened to you with you. I made the cliche joke that gets made to me all the time. That's why I don't. I mean, I don't really. It's not like I hate it. It's just like. Just one of those things where, but I understand, like, I can empathize with the host and be like, all right, I understand why you
Well,
did it.
Imagine that, but, like, every day someone asks me how the weather is.
Oh my God. Shut
like,
up.
Every fucking day.
I'm Jesus.
I used to have a girlfriend. She is Colombian. And she would automatically stop talking to you if you did some hack shit about her, like, Colombian, where's the drugs?
Cocaine.
Oh. How's it going?
Yeah, that's fair, I would say.
Yeah, it's funny how a girl will just, like, if you make a joke about a girl's name, for example, they will shut you down. Like, my little sister's name, Rihanna, and someone says, hey, where's your umbrella, Ella? She's like, fuck you. It could be, like, a hedge fund manager that, like, was the nicest guy ever. He says that out of it.
Well, yeah, just hack shit doesn't fly, man.
No,
that's
man.
How it goes.
People don't like hacks. You know, like, that hacky fucking, like, you haven't heard it a million times, like, every day. Well, like, what the fuck are they thinking, you know?
Yeah, I mean, to get the how's the weather up there thing, that was hack in Wilt Chamberlain's time. A reporter asked him that, and he spit him in his face and said, it's raining, you know? So that had been established a long time ago as hack shit that deserves to get spit in your face.
If that's been happening since the 70s, maybe it's a... Well, if it's been hacked in the 70s, maybe you should retire it.
You know what else people should retire?
What?
Run, Forrest, run. You know, if anyone...
Oh, Jesus. God, of course.
If anyone not retired? Is running, like...
Drake recently put it in a song.
Oh.
0 to 100.
Yeah.
Jesus. He wow. All my respect that I didn't have for Drake just went out the window.
There's also we should probably give up This Is Sparta. If you're out there and you still do
no,
this
that's,
is
that's not still going around though, is it?
I haven't heard it, my okay, goodness. Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, things like that, Where's the Weather, Run Forrest Run, This Is Sparta, that needs to stop.
Yeah, I think that shit all needs to go. You know what's great at running a joke into the ground is the internet. Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or like Reddit in specific. Like you go on Reddit and like someone will say like there is this, like, say someone explains something like really complex with a lot of like terminology. Someone will be like, I understood some of these words, or got it, magic. And it's just like, it's like, dude, that was like, maybe that was funny the first time, but yeah. It's like, you've said, like, how the fuck do you think that shit is still funny? Like, you go to the front page of Reddit, though. Like, if you go to the funny section, it's just shit posts. It's just all fucking shit posts.
Mike, I'm glad that you're there digging through the shit so that people like me don't... I don't actually have to go to Reddit. The good content comes to me, you know? But I'm glad that you're fucking, you know, the Mike Rowe putting on the scuba suit and going through the shit and finding, oh, like, this one's good.
Downvoting everything, just like, no.
How's your karma, Mike?
It's good. It's all right. I got front page once. I got a front page post once. Holy yeah. Shit. On a front page meme. Yes.
Big, you know, I had one of my tweets go to a Russia Today story because I was making fun of Obama working out.
That's amazing.
And I just hashtag Teacot, you know, make fun of this instead of Benghazi. And just, that's all they needed. They loved it.
That's awesome. It's funny. Whenever I brag about social media, I feel like, at first I'm like, I should say this, and then right in the middle of it I'm like, this sounds so pathetic.
It's so pathetic. Like, it really is.
Like, not to knock the New Times, right? Because I'm really happy that I won
best
Twitter on planet Earth of all time for eternity, even for all future tweeters. But then, like, saying it out loud, I'm just like, I won best Twitter?
So what you're saying is we should just give you our wives and sisters without having to bring that up. Just,
exactly.
Okay.
My dad, he texted me and he's like, oh, I'm so proud of you. I'm like, damn, how low to the bar did I set for my dad that this is his pinnacle? He's like, all right, got it. I'm just going to come to grips with the fact that he's not going to do much I'm going to be proud of. So
it's like, what does Michael do? Oh, well, I'll tell you one thing. He does a lot with Twitter. He is on Twitter. He's getting tweets. He's doing that.
Your son's a hedge fund manager? Oh, that's all right, I guess. But, you know.
Does he have the funniest Twitter in South Florida? Don't think so, lame-o.
What is he, reblogging Business Insider in the Wall Street Journal? Fuck him.
My biggest, like, social media achievement is that Danny Brown, the rapper, follows me.
That's pretty... I feel like that's a pretty big thing.
And he only follows women, so...
so he's going to be cute.
Yeah. So he's going to be really surprised when he finds out you have a dick.
Yep. So, shouts out to Danny Brown. Mutual follow.
Oh, yeah. I'm not followed by anybody important.
How many followers do you have, Mike?
Like, not a lot. Like, 300... Like, not more than 400.
Wow. Best in Miami. That's fucked up.
Yeah, that is fucked up. Right? That's an injustice.
Everyone's just following food trucks.
I was very surprised when I won that award. I'm like, no one follows me. I'm like, I guess there's one important person that follows me, and that's what matters. You know what I mean? I feel good about the Twitter though, because like I fucking put a lot of work into it, and like I make sure I tweet, like I make sure to tweet at least, you know, a certain amount of times a week. So I sit down every week and write a bunch of tweets. So
but
I'm like,
I think if you did that much work, you should just fucking pay for the Favstar service, you know, and just like get followers, you know, like because like to tweet, I mean, your content is great. I love your tweets, but like, you know, that's not putting just throwing good content out into the void, you know, isn't necessarily how to get followers. I mean, I don't know how to get followers. I just tweet at people, and if they like me, they follow me.
That's,
you know?
That's where I read this thing about how to produce followers naturally and not to have, like, rely on bots or things like that. And a lot of it is, like, to be in actively engaged, like at in the moment, in the high times of Twitter.
That I can't schedule that, so I'm not.
Yeah,
like right now the Emmys are going on. You know, you could be killing it right now on Twitter.
Yeah, I could be.
And recording this podcast
instead, I could be getting Twitter
media choice.
We should have we should have been watching the Emmys while doing this podcast.
Yeah, I know, like that's on my to-do list of things to do is to figure out how to get more Twitter followers. But at the moment.
Isn't that pathetic kind of a thing to be what? Like, oh, like I need to dedicate more time to get more Twitter followers.
It's just one of the, it's like, it used to be that you were a comedian and all you had to do was just go subject yourself to humiliating open mics. And now you have to subject yourself to like social media, like, oh, well, I got to live tweet this thing that I don't care about. Like what snarky thing can I say about the VMAs?
Yeah.
Yep.
Which I haven't said anything. I didn't watch them. Did you?
No, I didn't.
I caught my dad watching a recap of it.
Nice.
Yeah. So here's what, if you missed it, Miley Cyrus won and she had a homeless man accept her award.
What, she won best artist or something?
I don't know.
She won something. A award.
Yeah. She won an A award. I think maybe two, actually. Everyone was wearing leather at the VMAs. Like that was okay. That was the it thing. Amber Rose, if you're not familiar with Amber Rose, she's probably one of the most like banging women in the world. Mm-hmm. She went with a chain dress, like just little chains,
dress is better, I think.
Not to be a total fag here, but Rose McGowan actually wore that dress before. It was the exact same dress, and I saw that on Twitter.
Oh, total really? Fag. Jesus, look at this guy. See, that's why John has more Twitter followers than us. He stays up to date with this kind of thing.
I mean,
Twitter.
You know, you just got to follow BuzzFeed and you know what's popping on Twitter. You know how to pander to the lowest common denominator hashtag.
I'm all about that, you know, lowest common hashtag. Yeah, so I didn't watch the VMAs, and I couldn't bring myself to make fun of it even. Not even for the followers. But that is on my to-do list, though. I need to get more followers and stuff, but there's other things that I'm more concerned about. Like, I'm writing a pilot and some spec scripts, and that's more important for me.
Oh, sure it is. Yeah.
It is.
No, I'm kidding.
You got me, John Gregory.
That's more important than fucking Twitter manipulating followers? Hashtags.
Yeah.
But how about... Rob Delaney, he got a TV job by his Twitter.
Did you guys see that fucking Jimmy Kimmel set?
Yes. What? Oh my gosh. That
Rob Delaney had?
No.
Dude, it was the worst. I mean, it was like, you know, his Twitter account, I went through like, you know, my Rob Delaney hating phase. Like I went through my Dane Cook hating phase, you know, wow. But then it's just like the guy cranks out great tweets, you know, and saw him on Jimmy Kimmel though. And it was just the worst. Like he was so disconnected from the audience and like
wow,
like he would say things there and you're like, you're waiting for a punchline and then he's waiting for laughter, you know. It was just awful. And then what really made it bad though is he tried to get it taken off the internet, you know. That's where he fucked up.
How could someone that's so proficient in the internet not understand how the internet works?
Yeah, you're not the first person to ask that question. You know,
I think I need to go deeper. I'm gonna write a think piece about it.
Well, I think this was a year ago, Mike, but
it doesn't matter. Let's revamp it. Okay?
It really, I mean,
that's how you're going to get famous. Just bring it back up. Just like start going to major.
Remember
points.
That time Rob Delaney, like that's something Gawker would do. Like, remember that time Rob Delaney did some bad stuff on Kimmel? That's weird.
I thought you said Kindle for a second.
Kindle.
I can't believe the book. Have you seen the books he's downloaded? Oh my God. All young adult fiction. All young adult fiction.
Disgusting.
So, yeah, I didn't see this. I mean, I downloaded a special. I thought it was pretty funny.
I love the special. I used to like really swagger jack Rob Delaney.
What did you just say?
Like swagger jack Rob Delaney.
What's swagger jack?
Reggie, thanks for keeping the show real, though.
I'm trying to. Like, yeah. Mike is just like a real blocker. He's got to have my hater blockers on.
It's
Mike,
true. That's what the Jumalati does.
Let me say, you are the least successful member of the Jumanati.
No, I know some guys. Don't be so soon. Some guys went to my summer camp and took too much acid.
I once read a list of who's in the Illuminati. Not the Jumalati. I can't get my hands on that one. And
every Jew is in the Jumalati.
Bismarcky is apparently in the Illuminati.
Bismarcky. Really?
Your evil organization loses all credibility when you have Bismarcky on there. Like, if he's like a major member, if he's worth listing, no thanks. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, that's... I don't know. Do you believe in the Illuminati, John? Do you think they're controlling everything?
No.
No?
No, not at all.
But I thought, so
the world's going to shit. Like, people are, what people are in control of is, like, so little, and it's spiraling out of control so fast.
You know, I think it's funny, because I was talking to somebody outside of AV about you, right? And they're like, I forget who, as I do every week.
Yeah.
And they said to me, they're like, you know, John Gregory, like, he's, like, really conservative, right? And I'm like, you don't get it, do you?
No. They're like, that is the worst thing. Like, if you disagree with someone from the left, they automatically assume that you're conservative.
No. Look, this is what I think it is, though. This is why I think this person did this. I think it was an honest mistake, right? Okay. Because it's safe to say you're a libertarian, right?
Yes.
You're a libertarian. So what that means, right, you believe in small government and ritual sacrifices children, right? That's what a libertarian is, right?
Go so far to say that I'm an anarchist with libertarian leanings, because that is a very important distinction for me to make, is that I don't believe in government at all.
Do libertarians feel about financial aid offices? Like, because I had a problem today, and my understanding is that under libertarianism, I fight the lady behind the desk. And that's how I determine whether...
Well, that's a great phrase, under libertarianism, because, like what a libertarian wants is, like, no one to rule you, like, no one to take your tax money. So to say to be under that, when what we're under right now is a fucking oligarchy. I mean, you guys know that, right? Like, the whole facade of representative democracy has totally fallen by the wayside, and that everyone in power caters to, like, 1% of the population while pandering to 90% of the population. And then, like, the few people who can think for themselves are just fucked because there's no one representing their views.
John, why are you telling me this? I was just at the Jumalati meeting. Orchestrated this.
But, like, what you were saying about financial aid, it's like...
Well, that would be a moot point, because then it wouldn't exist.
I mean, like, here's the thing. When the... Are you aware that, like, of the skyrocketing cost of college in this country, that it has gone up year after year after year? Like, it keeps growing at this astronomical rate, that it, like, it is exponentially expanding. And that is because, honestly, the federal government subsidizes college education. And that allows college institutions to raise tuition prices because there is more, you know, support for more and more people to come in, so they can keep jacking up the prices, and the federal government will continue to give out loans. And, like, Elizabeth Warren was all pissed off that, like, the federal government was actually making a profit on these student loans, you know, which is hilarious, because it's like, well, what do you want? Like, these student loans to just run the federal government into the ground? Like, they can't pay for them at all, and it just bankrupts the country? You know, like, that, the way loans work is you invest in something that you consider to be profitable, like a college education, because you're investing in the idea that later that person will sustain an income that can pay off those loans. But if that person cannot sustain an income to pay off those loans, and a lot of people fucking don't graduate from college and they're stuck with college debt, that fucks a lot of people. And the government actually subsidizes that misallocation of resources.
So pretty much what you're saying is you hate gay people.
Damn, yep. John Gregory, what a roundabout way of saying that.
Yeah, right?
Disgusting.
Okay, you love guns and weed and you hate gay people. Okay, yeah, it's funny because that when she said that, like, I just don't think people have this predisposition, you know, to, like, to you believe in one of the things that one side says, and then they fucking pile all the other shit on top of it.
All this other shit, and then you just go with it, because you know that the other side is worse, you know? Like, like, Democrats know that the Republicans are worse, and it's like, whoop-de-fucking-do. That doesn't make you the smartest person alive, you know, to figure out
except
that.
Except for me, I mean.
But, like, I just, that doesn't mean that everything Rachel Maddow says is right. You know what I mean?
No, but it's, you know, and I try to explain to them, like, no, he's a libertarian, and that's way, way different. That does not mean that he toes the Republican Party line.
No, not even close. My God, I could never vote for a Republican.
I don't know. You're a big white man drinking whiskey. You look pretty Republican to me.
I mean, but I've already gotten...
Look at all this white male privilege just sitting there.
Exactly.
The
I don't need more. I'm enjoying what I have. There's no need to get greedy.
Whoa. I don't want to own slaves in 20 years.
Exactly.
Come on, guys.
The Republicans are like, don't you remember how good it used to be? Don't you hear the stories your grandfather used to tell you? White men could do anything in this country and no one else could. Don't you want that again?
Those were awesome.
all nostalgia has an asterisk on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was I saw a photo post that read like, in the 50s, even the bears were nice. And then right under it was like a photo of a black woman on a by a water fountain said colors only.
My God.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, you read a lot about economics, I know. I
love economics.
Yeah, I like economics a lot too. You know what got me into economics was Freakonomics. You know, people bash pop economics, right?
Right, right, yeah.
But if it wasn't for that, I would not understand economics at all because I wouldn't have been interested in it. So it made me understand. You know, and what's interesting about economics too is like, you know, I don't read about it as much as you do, I'm sure, but it's like, what's crazy about economics is kind of like medicine, in my opinion, is that I think they're the two sciences that affect our lives the most, and so many people know so little about it and are very, very willing to confidently make opinionated. It's like, oh man, if you just eat baby kale, you're cured of cancer. You know, like, you know how many fucking
you don't need chemo, just smoke weed.
Oh,
do you know how many
fucking assholes?
Have
oh my God, Jesus Christ,
you're poisoning yourself, Mike.
How many assholes have gone up to me and be like this one girl. She went up to me and look, I like her as a person. She's cool, but she said something to me that I would just like, as a cancer survivor, I can't fucking handle it. She's like, oh, have you had the cancer cure weed? And I'm like,
oh, which strain is that?
Yeah, right. I'm like, no, because it doesn't exist. But I'm like, oh, I'd like to see their clinical trial. And I'm not going to get in an argument with them about it. It's like with economics. There's some people, I try to talk to them about economics. And it's just like, not even Marxist, dude. Just people that do not get it at all on a fundamental level that I just stop the conversation. Because I'm like, nothing productive is going to come out of this discussion.
Yes,
you know what I mean? Like,
yes, I know what you mean.
And this girl like was trying to tell me about how weed cures cancer. I'm like, where's the clinical trial? Do you even fucking understand how evidence-based science and medicine... Do you pay attention to the scientific method?
Yeah.
No, you were smoking weed. You didn't. But still, you know, it's like, come on.
Yeah, I know. It's like, you know, the minimum wage, honestly, is that when people argue that shit. Like, Forbes came out... They published a study. This was a scientific study. I mean, Forbes published it, but it was like an academic study that was like a meta study of all the studies that had ever been done on the minimum wage.
Okay.
And what they found was, and this is very consistent with like the classical understanding of economics, is that when you artificially raise the price of something, you create a shortage of that. And a shortage in employment is called unemployment.
Uh-huh.
So when you raise artificially through force that has nothing to do with market signals and price signals, that creates an artificial not demand, like artificial supply. Everyone's going to want that fucking job. And it really hurts teenagers the most. Like young people coming into the economy who don't have working skills. Because those people, it's like, well, you know, I could hire you or I could hire this grad student, you know? So, so I'm going to hire the grad student every time because he's older and he's more mature.
Yeah.
And how are you supposed to get a work experience when the work that you produce is not worth the minimum wage? If it's worth less than the minimum wage, why would someone hire you?
Huh. Hmm. So you don't think there should be a minimum wage?
I don't think that there should be like violent coercion to force people to do things they don't want to do. And that would include the minimum wage. Like if someone wants to work for $5 an hour, are you going to tell me that you're going to fucking arrest him or arrest his employer for hiring him for $5 an hour? Like if he's like, all I can do is fucking push a broom. I don't speak the language. I don't do anything. But like I live here and I need fucking money and I could use a job. Like, no, sorry, pal. Your job's illegal because people think that work should be worth $10 an hour, even though you don't have any skills that are worth $10 an hour. You are fucked. You are marginalized.
That's an interesting perspective on that.
Yeah. That's the first time I ever heard that perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we call the libertarian perspective. No one is familiar with it.
So what you're saying is you hate gay people. No, that's interesting. You know, when I read these like opinions like from, you know, libertarians and stuff like that. Like it's at first it sounds kind of evil, but then they can make compelling cases.
There are evil libertarians, man. That's
you're like, oh no, some people are genuinely evil, but
there are some libertarians who are like, oh, why should anyone tell me what I should be able to hit my employees if I want to? You know, yeah. They're my employees. But my whole basis is I think the most succinct, you know, label, and labels are so important these fucking days, is voluntarist. Yeah. Is that I believe that all human interaction should be as voluntary as possible. Uh-huh. Obviously, there are certain people, criminals, that you can't be voluntary with. Like, give me back my shit. And they're like, no, you know, and then you're going to have to use some force. But I'm saying, should people be forced to pay for things that they don't want to pay for? I think that's immoral, always. Like, even if government worked, even if welfare cured poverty, if a single mother was on welfare and then her children weren't every time, you know, her children moved up a socioeconomic level every time. Even then, if there are people who don't want to pay for that, you know, it's immoral to force them to pay for that. But luckily, that's not even the case. Welfare creates dependence. So you got the consequentialist reasoning and the moral high ground, I think, from a voluntarist point of view.
Wow, that's some pretty heavy shit here on the Black and Jew podcast. Yeah, I don't know. That's I like a lot of the stuff. Like, I went to the Mises Institute, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was a member of there. I like reading that perspective because it really kind of opens your eyes, you know? I can't honestly say that I would go to the level that you go with it, but I get it. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, if you want to argue something, I'm right here, man.
But the thing is, here's the thing with me, though. It's like with this, I don't know if I could argue with you well enough about the minimum wage. Like, I don't know if I can make a compelling enough case for the minimum wage, because I would think, yeah, I'm for the minimum wage, right? I don't know if I
can... No, because you feel that people should overall get paid more money, right? I mean, let's be honest, that poorer people should get more money.
I have very little command of this discussion, by the way. So I wanted to offer the simplest view. Yes, I do feel like people should get paid more money.
Right.
'Cause I've been in situations where it's just day to day. It's all goes to the cell phone bill. It all goes to gas, and then what's left for me? So
totally. Yeah. No, and you know, younger people that don't have more marketable skills, you know, because they haven't been in the workforce long enough, they're more affected by those kinds of laws, because it's if I get a job, I would like to get paid as much as I possibly could, you know? But that's just the fucking, you know, buggy cart repairmen who oppose, you know, cars being invented and shit, you know, the McDonald's cashiers right now. There was a couple months ago that nationwide protest, because McDonald's employees want to be paid $15 an hour. And you know, McDonald's, they responded by saying, okay, those automatic machines that we're going to have replace the cashiers in 2016, we're going to push that up 9 months instead, since it's this huge issue. And they're just going to fire all those workers, because you can't force people to pay people what they're not worth. I mean, they will always find that economic out. And it's fucked up. I'm not necessarily saying that it's good that people are like this, or that people are so greedy and they want to pay their employees as little as possible. But the truth is, if you force this standard to happen, the fat cats at McDonald's are going to go, okay, you know, that money that we were actually going to pay those people, instead we're going to invest that into machines so we don't need employees at all. I mean, that's just how it works.
Yeah. It's the market forces.
And you know, it's a good thing overall that we are not going to need cashiers, you know? It's that's good that we don't need you know, people to fucking put garbage into garbage trucks, that, you know, technology advances. That's a positive thing overall.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I can't have a debate with you about the minimum wage, because, and I know this is a very controversial opinion, but I feel like if I don't know enough about something to argue about it, then I don't argue about it.
I totally agree with that.
That's why I'm just listening. What fuels my understanding, let's say the minimum wage, is that, you know, these jobs at McDonald's, they were usually occupied by young people, right?
Yes.
And then now we have a shift where older people in their mid-20s to early 30s are occupying these jobs.
Yep.
Because I've, go around in my high school, everyone was like, no, I'm not working at McDonald's. I'm never doing that.
Right. Yeah.
And then, you have people, I need to work at McDonald's. So they're working at McDonald's. So you have people that actually have kids, two kids, that are going over there, and they're like, well, I'm getting paid $7.50 an hour, and I can't do anything. It's either you know, you're sick and you need new shoes.
Yeah.
And that, and it's just, it's more pathos with me than it is like, you know.
Oh,
like
I logos. Understand that. I totally understand that.
Yeah. And like, I mean, listening to you, that does make sense. Makes sense to the point of like, well, just the market as this thing right here, like looking at it from the outside, very clinical. Yeah, that is true. Like if you're forcing like, the fat cats in McDonald's are going to be like, all right, cool. None of you will
no,
work.
No, they don't care. You know what I mean?
They're still getting their checks. And you know what? Yeah, they're just going to replace you.
So this is something, all right, with which there's certain things that kind of makes me not fully be a libertarian.
Sure.
Right? Is like, I feel like there's certain things that the market, it can't control completely.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's like, for example, the example I like to give, right? And I've had a discussion with another one of my libertarian friends about this, about, let's say you're a chemical company, right?
Yes.
And you're
pollution, right?
And you're dumping toxic waste mm-hmm. into a somewhere. And they say, oh, well, the free press and the free market will make it so if a company dumps enough toxic waste, then people will stop using that company and then they'll shut down. But I don't really think that'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
A good example of... That was a perfect example, because the BP oil spill is like, what if a company did that while there was a government? What would happen? And it's like, oh, it turns out the regulators who were overseeing BP were doing cocaine with the people from BP. And they're going to stripper parties because BP is like, we have a ton of money. Let's bribe the government. And the government's like, we love being bribed. Yes, we'll make regulations work for you if you bribe. Oh, my God. Of course. Finance our campaigns, you know. Take our head bureaucrats out to parties to do coke and bang strippers, which is what happened. So the government was inspecting this company. The government... Yeah. was making sure that this company wasn't supposedly going to totally fuck, you know, wasn't totally going to fuck the Gulf. But the government was in on it is the point, you know. They don't give a shit about
the
common person.
You don't think the EPA mitigates anything at all?
Oh, my God. The EPA is so fucking bad, dude. No, honestly, it's a real thing. It's more common in Texas than anywhere else. But what,
you don't think government regulations mitigates any pollution, any of that?
No, because what government regulation is, government regulation comes from corporate lobbyists. Like laws get passed to benefit the top corporation, because the top corporation has the most money and they can handle fixed costs better than any of their competitors. So they lobby the government to impose fixed costs. It's like in New York City, it costs $1 million to obtain a cabbie license, and that's to keep people from starting cabbie companies. So only the biggest companies can do it. And like Uber and Lyft are totally fucking that up for the cab companies. And so right now the cab companies are pressuring the local law enforcement harder than ever to enforce these laws to maintain their privileged status. So regulations, in my opinion, are all – because who makes regulations? Congress, for fuck's sake. The most corrupt cocksuckers on the planet and inept. I mean, all they care about is like catering to whoever financed their campaign. So like the idea, it's like, oh, we should have regulations. That's like a fucking wish, man, because the truth is there's some corrupt congressman going, this will help my friend. It'll fuck all his competitors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about, like, let's say food safety or something like that? You think that's all...
The FDA, great example. Say the FDA prevents a drug that cures...
Let's say like chicken or food, you know? You don't think that part of a company's reason for making sure there's not a salmonella outbreak is to avoid, you know, litigation from the FDA or something like that?
Okay.
Or from the government, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I have an FDA response. The FDA, right, makes sure that when drugs come out, they that they don't kill people, right? That that they're supposed to cure the people and not kill the people. So say a drug comes out that cures a disease that kills 10,000 people a year.
Yeah.
And the FDA, I think it takes like 5 or 8 years or something like that to get a prescription drug passed by the FDA to jump through all the hoops and spend the $1 billion or whatever it takes to prove to the federal government. So say they do that. The FDA would say, like, oh, we approve this new drug that's going to cure 10,000 people a year. They don't say, oh, our tests killed 50,000 people over the last 5 years, you know? Uh-huh. And, like, they're the most recent – fuck, I forget what disease it was, but some communicable disease was going through spinach, and the FDA was like,
I think it was salmonella or E. coli or something.
Yeah, it was E. coli. The FDA was like the third to pick it up. Two private food watchdogs picked it up before the FDA is, because the FDA has a monopoly. They're not going to get fired. No one in the FDA is ever going to get fired, so they don't give a fuck. That's just the it's the tragedy of commons. With the government, no one owns it. You know what I mean? Like, presidents get reelected, senators get reelected, congressmen get reelected. Term limits don't affect that. So like the whole thing, that's the whole benefit of monarchy actually over representative democracy, is that like the king actually owns the country, so it's in his best interest for the country to do well, whereas for the elected representative, it's in his best interest to do well for the next election, because after the next election, who the fuck knows, you know?
Yeah.
So it's basically like that scene in the Temple of Doom when everyone's getting the gold out of the fucking temple, and then it starts to crumbling and everyone's scrambling to get all the gold out. That's my view of government.
Wow.
Damn.
This is a fucking interesting episode. Holy shit.
Shit.
Yeah, this is a
Google voluntarism. Voluntarism.
Definitely going to Google voluntarism. Man, I don't even know where to go from here.
I had a question.
You want to go about public education? I'll go there.
Oh, shit, John. Oh, shit. Education, please.
Oh, please, John.
I haven't even Googled voluntarism yet.
You're killing everything that I thought was sacred.
My femininity.
I'm actually going to pour some more bourbon right now.
All right, do it.
Well, if you want to shift the discussion somewhere else... I had a question, and one was like, this is about comedy. It feels so stupid.
It feels so stupid after this.
Why do I even want to talk about comedy? I'm just going to go lay down in the bed.
Libertarians like the paleo diet so much?
Great fucking question. That's because most libertarians are actually looking for a new religion to follow. Most libertarians are like, oh, Catholicism isn't real, or Christianity isn't real. Oh, belief in government isn't real. What's real? It's like atheism and the paleo diet. Those are the only two things that are real in this world.
Is that a bit? You could make that a bit. You should make that a bit.
Because it's funny, because the other staunch libertarian I know is a tall white guy that trades Bitcoin and eats paleo.
Oh damn, is he advanced? Yeah. Does he get the wizard cap?
Maybe it's I don't have enough.
Just to be clear, I don't eat the paleo diet. I eat the bulletproof diet. You know,
oh, it's bulletproof.
Because I don't give a fuck if cavemen ate it or not. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the macronutrients are what's important to me. So like,
yeah. Well, I think he does the bulletproof thing too.
Oh,
he
damn
might.
It.
I don't know.
Well, then that's a smart, handsome guy.
That's got to be a coincidence, though, because I don't think there's enough data points to really come to a conclusion. Or maybe the FDA would come to a conclusion, according to John. I don't know. Yeah, but I was doing the bulletproof. Today, the first day, I didn't do the bulletproof coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for those of you who don't know, bulletproof coffee is when you take coffee and then you blend it with butter. I do it in the Nutribullet, like not a blender. And it's supposed to give you energy, and mm-hmm. I think it does. I like it. It's good, you know?
And it suppresses hunger.
Yeah, it really suppresses hunger. Today's the first day I didn't do it in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel good. I didn't feel as good. But it's good, you know, as long as you mitigate it by not eating a bunch. It's like, you know, don't eat a fried fucking something in the morning with everything. But yeah, I've been like really trying to cut down on calories and weight and shit. And I got this fucking app called MyFitnessPal. Have you heard of this shit?
No.
Oh my god, dude, it's like fucking crack. It's like it helps me lose weight like crack. It's like playing an RPG but with food. So like what you do is like I'm trying to, you know, monitor my calorie intake because I need to lose some weight, and like what it does is let me find my phone. You record everything you eat during the day, and then you record your, and at first I'm like, this is crazy, but then I would just like, look, check it out. Like I have everything. Like you can see what I ate today, and you can scan the barcodes on the food that you're eating, and then
seven
put in the portion
sprouted
size
grains. Yeah. What is that?
It's Ezekiel bread.
I don't know what Ezekiel bread is.
It's sprouted grain bread. It's good.
Oh, all right.
You have to keep it in a freezer.
Yeah, it's like this bread that's, I don't know, it's good. I think Ezekiel, the first one was like Ezekiel, one of these passages from Ezekiel. I think religious fanatics make it. And it was like, they made bread that the exact bread that Jesus ate. You know?
the exact bread yeah. that Jesus ate.
According to the Bible.
Okay.
You know, according to the Bible, which is 100% true, so obviously. And yeah, and like, it's good, you know, it's he uses sprouted grains instead of regular grains, which is like, you know, it's like if you take like, it's like, you know, when you make whiskey or something you can relate to. When you make whiskey, like Scotch whiskey, they sprout the grains. They put it in a moist environment. And apparently when you do that, it has more nutrients. Huh. That's not why they do it for whiskey. But but yeah, and it supposedly, I feel better when I eat it personally. Hmm. It doesn't bog me down in the same way that regular bread does. So,
well, as someone who's lost 70 pounds, I'll just say this. If you want to lose weight, cut bread. Like that is like the easiest fucking, you just cut carbs, start eating more fat. And I honestly don't watch my calories at all. It's not something I'm concerned about. Because carbs are what spike your insulin, and insulin is what makes you store calories as fat. So if you prevent your insulin from spiking during the day, you pretty much just burn the calories that you eat. So if you eat enough fat and you create a calorie deficit, although I don't create a calorie deficit every day, like you burn stored body fat as a major source of energy.
I don't think I can cut the bread. cutting carbs is not.
That's his whole thing now. You know that, right?
Like, yeah, I know.
Yeah, everyone knows.
It is a great identity. Bread. The sourdough is amazing.
That's his identity.
Pretty much every comedian knows. Like, ask any comedian in South Florida, and they know.
That's another thing they like doing. Like, when they're going to introduce you, this guy makes great bread.
I appreciate, actually.
Honestly, I was looking forward to maybe eating some bread tonight. But, you know, that's all right.
We didn't get him a chance to make loaves this week. Because we hung out with, on Sunday, we hung out with Christine's friend, who's the AP Bureau, he was the AP Bureau Chief for Havana, Cuba. Okay. And he's been in Cuba for 3.5 years. And
couldn't make him any bread?
He couldn't make the podcast, too. We had to scramble for you at the last minute. But yeah, he was a really interesting guy to talk to. And he says that communism is working great there, contrary to popular belief. That talking to him was very interesting. Really cool guy. And he was talking about how in Cuba, certain products, like they got in a tub of ice cream. It was not that big, like maybe like 3 cartons worth. And it cost $90 at the store. That's what they were selling it for. And then when it melted and it thawed and melted and then refroze because it was in the shitty freezer. And they sold it, marked it down to 50 after like 2 weeks.
Holy shit.
Yeah. And it's really interesting in Cuba. Like he talked, cause
interesting.
It is though. It's very
awful.
Yeah. Well, it's still interesting. Awful, but cause you know, if you're in Miami, like you hear about anything about Cuba, it's not exactly the most nuanced view of it. And it's a shithole.
Yeah.
Right. It's bad. But what I'm saying is like, I never heard from anybody in Miami about the everyday life. Like, what's it like to live in Cuba every day? Like, what, like, there's people that live there, you know, like, I know it's a bad place to be, but like, what's everyday life like? Like, how does Castro's regime affect, how does communism affect your day-to-day life? Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert, not very well, but it's really interesting how they talk about, like, I asked Christine, cause she studied abroad there, and she was saying, I'm like, oh, how's the Cuban food? She's like, it's horrible in Cuba. The Cuban food's really bad.
What?
Yeah, it's horrible because they don't have access to those good raw ingredients. Like,
whole fucking, one of the whole reasons for visiting the island now, it's like, oh, how's the beach in Cuba? It sucks, man. Communism ruined the sun there. It's terrible. It's like,
yeah, it was really interesting about how. Yeah, and he's a journalist too, so you, God knows the stuff he has to deal with, because it's not easy to have a bureau there, you know, and like anytime, but it's hard to keep a bureau from an American news company in Cuba, but he does it by like, you know, making sure to walk that line where like he won't make like an unfair criticism. He'll be like, look, he won't like go all, because you can't go all out and be like, oh, fuck the government, blah, 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 because then you won't be able to talk about anything. So like, you know, he walks that thin line every day, and he has like a government handler, quote unquote, that like takes, it's like
really
crazy. Yeah. But the everyday, like he was talking about how they reuse the cooking oil there so much.
That's how you get cancer, bro.
yeah. There's probably a few environmental things there that would cause that. But yeah, like they reuse the cooking oil so much that everything tastes like everything else. So like every fish, chicken, and beef all taste the same. They had a pizza parlor there once. They had a pizza parlor there once, right? And it was just the worst pizza ever because the dough was gross. Like the, and like they got like 2 pieces of cheese and a little tomato. And they
see, like if pizza tastes like fish, that's terrible. But if fish tastes like pizza, that's great.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But, or is it in communist Cuba, everything just tastes like pizza fish, like blended?
Anything that doesn't taste like pizza fish is part of the bourgeois. But it was interesting also because you can't, it's illegal to slaughter cows in Cuba, right? So unless the government decrees that you can slaughter your cow, right?
Okay.
So what people...
Because it's not really your cow, right? The government owns it.
It's the government's cow, yeah. So people... So what will happen is in order to butcher their meat, the farmers will put the cow... Tie the cows to train tracks and let it get killed by the cow or run over the cow with their truck.
Or convince it to commit suicide. Yeah,
exactly.
Look, cow, you're fat. What are you doing? No one likes you, cow.
So they'll do that.
They just convert them to Islam.
Yeah, exactly. And the cow blows themselves up and then takes one step out of the process of butchering. And then they say, oh, it's an accident. And then they eat the cow. Or they get caught and then go to prison for God knows how many years.
Jesus. No, that's like how Christians in North Korea are executed for pornography. Like Christianity is considered pornography in North Korea. I was just reading about like these Christians that were the government forced 10,000 people into the soccer stadium to watch them, and they tied all these Christians to posts and they blew them up with anti-aircraft.
Holy shit!
Yeah, just shot them to shit, you know. And Kim Jong Un actually killed his girlfriend that way because apparently she was Christian or something. So
wait,
whoa,
yeah,
wow, that's a way to break up with somebody.
And speaking of like, well, for somehow in North Korea, like a myth that the government has been able to maintain is that South Korea is poorer than the North,
huh?
And there are these South Korean like. I think they're called choco pies or something like that. It's like, you know, this like sweet treat or whatever. And Kim Jong-un recently banned choco pies in North Korea. He still pays like sometimes soldiers and like generals and stuff in them as a treat. But like what South Korea did is they filled all these balloons with the choco pies and then sent them over the border and like sent like 600 choco pies into North Korea. And it's like starting to crack that like, well, maybe the South isn't as poor as us.
They can just
tie
these things to balloons.
Yeah.
Do you ever listen to NPR's Planet Money podcast?
No.
That's a great podcast. You should check it out.
All right.
It's they have really interesting articles. In one article, they made a shirt, right? And they tracked the production of this t-shirt from designing it all the way to getting it delivered to your door. Every step, they interview the factory workers, they interview the cotton producers, they talk to the cotton producers about cotton subsidies. They went through every step. It was super interesting.
Isn't capitalism beautiful?
Oh, it's beautiful.
I mean,
magnificent.
But honestly, like that's like a truism of capitalism is that like to make like a fucking number two pencil these days, you know, it takes like a million people on seven continents to
it's
do
like
it.
That South it's, Park episode with the gold.
With the gold, yeah. Exactly.
An interesting quote I heard about modern capitalism was, I forget who said it, but he said that it's no small wonder, it's a great wonder or something like that, that nine million people in New York are fed every day with no central locus of control. That's pretty fucking amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. Exactly, you know? Yeah.
Or you could have a central locus of control and then you're tying cows to railroad tracks.
Right. Yeah, and then you work, your minimum wage is a fucking bread ticket and then you have to go wait in line
after
work.
Come on, dude. Bread, they got rid of bread tickets and now it's a half a bread ticket. They had one on the NPR Planet Money.
It's bread Bitcoin.
Bread Bitcoin. How many bread coins?
Have you seen Bitcoin farming stations in China?
They have those?
Dude.
Yeah, they do.
No, Reggie, that was a joke.
That
man.
Was a joke.
Yes.
I only saw the picture. I gotta be honest.
That was a joke that fucking Bitcoin people made up, like saying like that was a joke that we were saying because like you know Bitcoin, a lot of Bitcoin enthusiasts happen to be libertarians or anarcho-capitalists, if you will, and so like that was a joke that they made that like oh look, our Bitcoin is fucking on the backs of like Chinese children laborers.
That's amazing.
You know, that, when it's not true, it's fucking fat fedora wearing neck bearded assholes who have bought like the latest graphics cards that are fucking mining Bitcoin. It's not Chinese people. They're making your iPhones, okay? If you want to feel bad about something, they're doing that.
read the pictures you see online, people. Just don't see the pictures and be like, oh, that'll be interesting.
I believe everything I see on the internet at face value.
To a podcast.
I know, it's like Facebook introducing the fucking satire thing. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
That they're not. They're going to put attach satire to Onion articles. Like, how are you going to know if your friend's retarded or not?
When someone believes an Onion article, that boggles my fucking mind.
There were some people, like, that believed that a baby was born with a baby in it.
Oh my god.
I cannot. It fucking boggles. It, you know, boggles, like, my fucking mind how gullible people are. It's like fucking mind boggling. Like, people just see something with no citations and they're like, all
and
right.
It rustles their jimmies.
Yeah. And they're just like, I can't believe that fucking whiskey gives you cancer according to this one blog that just that registered its domain 3 days ago. So it must be irrefutable. Like,
charcoal whitens teeth.
Yeah. Does it? Can I? Did you try it?
No,
have you tried it?
No.
I'm not serious.
But no, it's like with my favorite. I don't know if you're familiar, Mike, with the Literally Unbelievable blog.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah,
of course.
Great. I think where they peak.
Between us, who hasn't we seen everything on the internet?
I know. But I think where Literally Unbelievable peaked is with the Onion story of the abortion plex.
Oh, I was just. I knew you were going to say that.
The Americas.
Yeah.
Because. So I think maybe every Christian in America with an internet connection posted that link in outrage. Like, they're giving 14-year-old girls tickets to go see a movie after their abortion. That's so fucked up. And it's like, no, there's no mall that has an abortion clinic like inside the fucking movie theater. You're an idiot.
Planned Parenthood opens $8 billion abortion plex. That's amazing. The grand opening is long planned. $8 billion abortion plex, a sprawling abortion facility that will allow the organization to terminate unborn lives with an efficiency never before thought possible.
But people read that and think like, oh my god, this is Obama's America, you know?
But that's how fucking quick people are to just jump on their own side.
To confirm their bias.
Yeah, they're like, that confirmation bias on the internet is fucking...
Google nihilism too, people.
It's intense. Dude, the confirmation bias is so intense. Like, I see people, like with the Israel-Gaza debate, which I'm not fucking weighing in on this podcast, but people, it's just like, you're posting whatever makes you feel better about the side that you took.
Mm-hmm.
Shut the fuck up. You know?
What's amazing is that people can even have an opinion on it.
Yeah.
You know, that like you can live in this part of the world where you're not affected by it at all, where there are way worse tragedies going on right now, you know, that you don't give a fuck about.
Yeah.
But like, oh, this one's on the news, so hold on. The internet really needs to know my opinion on this.
Yeah, exactly. I like one great Onion article was like, woman decides not to post the status that would have swayed the gun control debate. I just unfollow my friend because except for there's this one guy that I really like to follow on Facebook, and he's an insane conspiracy theorist. Like
I have an insane conspiracy theorist friend, and it's amazing.
It's so fucking awesome. Like he, oh my god, it's amazing. Like he's always like, wake up. I'm like, you're the
wake
one
up,
that needs.
Sheeple.
Yeah, he says sheeple.
Dude,
he says sheeple.
Sheeple.
He says it
come
unironically.
On.
Yes. He is fucking insane. Like, I'm up, like, reading, like, I remember I was having an argument with him once, and he goes, and it was something about Russia, right? And, like, I gave him, like, this kind of, like, nuanced description of the situation, and he goes, brick, wake up. And I'm like, yeah, that's a thing that exists. That's four countries. What is it? Fucking, what's the B in BRIC that I was just talking about? Brazil, Russia, India, China.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, BRIC, wake up. I'm like, how does that answer what I'm just saying? Like, you literally said, like, those are four countries that exist.
It's like a
wake
catchphrase.
Up.
You know? Now, honestly, the deepest...
No, I remember what he was saying. He was saying that Russian boycotts of American goods will sink the American economy.
Actually,
he's like, maybe Obama will fucking learn once Putin puts a boycott, and then America starves because it was like,
okay, America's not gonna starve. But honestly, there is like this international de-dollarization going on that will immensely affect the American economy. I don't know if everyone's aware of this, but America and the EU and Russia are like having this sanctions war going on.
Yeah.
And it's affecting a lot of like Greece right now, like, and Spain have all this produce that they would ship to Russia that they can't get rid of, and they're looking for America to buy it up, and America's like, no, we've got food. You can't eat all the food in America. We're fine with that. So it's like fucking these countries. But like what Russia was doing, because we put these sanctions on them, is that they are de-dollarizing, and they are working with China to create a new international reserve note, you know, basically, that they're working on, like, because what makes the dollar so attractive to all these other countries is that Saudi Arabia will only trade their oil in dollars.
Yeah.
And
also that it's like, you know, all transactions go through dollars too at some point, all international
transactions. But the petrodollar is big player in that. Yeah, I mean, it is more complicated than that.
That's not what he was saying.
Sure.
He was saying that, like, not getting Russian vodka, you know, and shit like that.
No, that's idiotic.
Yeah, like, he wasn't making that. He's not capable of that nuanced of an argument. Like,
it really is a nuanced argument.
You know, you're
though.
Not giving, you're giving him way too much credit. Like, he's just saying, like, he's saying what he was saying, right? And I'm summarizing, but I mean, this is literally what he said. He said that if we piss off Russia too much, that's the end of America.
Well, no, of course not.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. So, you know, it's like I know it was
pissed
ridiculous.
Off Russia too much.
Yeah, exactly.
That is not a problem. We're the bigger dick swinging here.
Yeah, but, I'm like, I feel like our sanctions would hurt Russia more than their.
No, they do. They do. Yeah. But
he doesn't believe so.
Well, the craziest...
but he's full of gems, dude. Just like, oh my God, like fucking.
Well, my Facebook friend who's crazy, and he's like, he's an anarchist too, you know, which is why I'm Facebook friends with him. But, I mean, he's convinced that Robin Williams didn't even kill himself, you know? He's convinced that fucking...
Wake up!
That Michael J. Fox is faking his Parkinson's.
Wake up, people!
And here's the craziest one that I actually followed him for a little bit on.
Yeah?
And honestly, I was doing a lot of psychedelic drugs at the time.
Okay.
And for a week... whether the earth was flat or not. Okay. I mean, like, I'm totally honest. Like, for a week, I was like, how do I know that the earth is actually round? And he sent me this, like, video of supposedly some artist who used to work at NASA, you know, who was, like, talking about how he faked all these paintings and shit. And he was like, wake up, bro.
You were doing a lot of psychedelics at the time.
Oh,
you?
Man, I was doing mushrooms every 3 days.
And my friend also likes to do a lot of psychedelics.
So my mind was nimble, and I heard this information. And I was like, oh, let me look into this. And then I'm like, no, dude, the shadow on the moon is round. That's right there. Come on, look up at the moon. The earth is round. Everything's round. Come on.
You're like, oh, God, that was such good. That was amazing acid. I'm not, but I'm not calling that guy again. Maybe next time half a tab.
For real.
Wow. Yeah, it's super fucking interesting. I got a great bit out of about him, too, that works.
That's really?
It's one of my solid bits.
Oh, I don't want to force you into it.
No, but you've heard it a million times, I'm sure. Just about how, like...
Never mind.
Like, you can... We've all heard each other's jokes a million times, but yeah, he, like, just about how you can figure out that someone's insane before you, it wasn't about him, actually. It was another guy, and, like, he would always post these, like, really, like, aggressive, like, misogynistic things all the time, and he'd try to, like, school people, and I'm just like, you suck, and, like, I would see him in person, I'm like, I have no interest in pursuing a friendship with you, because I know what you're like, and you're a fucking insane person.
Dude, that's like those men's rights activists.
Oh, God, dude, yeah.
The worst human beings. Like,
John Gregory tells it how it is.
Boom, he's just shotgunning these.
Like, yeah, right.
Like, bam, bam.
But, like, to feel that, like, feminism is a threat to you, it's like, my God, dude, how insecure it
is.
It's like, the idea that women should be equal to you, it, like, threatens who you are as a person, you know?
And
that's
they blame everything on feminism. Like, they can't just realize, like, there's issues.
Oh,
in...
I can't get my dick sucked every hour of the day because of fucking Michelle Obama.
It's actually a bunch of guys that either haven't gotten their dick sucked or got their dick sucked by their wives and got divorced and got a bad divorce settlement. Like, that's all of them.
Or guys who have literally never had sex.
Oh, that either. Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Never had sex.
Incels. Or... Are you aware of that term? Involuntary celibate.
Yeah, yeah. That guy what's his name? That shot up all the people.
Elliot Rodgers.
Elliot Rodgers was an incel.
He was an incel. Yeah, yeah. Those are the people to worry about.
Yeah,
know?
Dude.
Like, the people that are so wrapped up. I mean, because, like, honestly, I don't know. It's not that hard to have sex. You know what I mean?
Like, well, if you're like that, it is. Well,
if you're a fucking crazy person, yes, you know.
Who's well, like, but the thing is about that, right, is, like, what a lot of guys, what'll happen with a lot of these guys, right, is, like, you've got the superficial problem, right? Mm-hmm. Like you got the superficial problem is that you can't have sex. It's like when I got diagnosed with cancer, I couldn't breathe, right? Okay. I thought it was like I was having an asthma attack, right? But the fact is that there was a tumor, right, fucking pushing on my trachea, okay? Right.
Yeah, my mom had cancer, and she had tumors in her lungs, and that's how it started as pneumonia.
So. And like, yeah, and you don't know what it is, and then like you just have this problem, and you're like, oh, I can't breathe. And I'm like, oh, it's... It, and then I go in, and they're like, you have fucking cancer.
Right.
And like, this is going to take... a shitload of chemo. It's going to take years out of your life. Yeah, all your energy, years out of your life. Like, I had like my mid-20s, pretty much, like, from 23 to 27, I was in treatment. So I missed a lot of shit. You know what I mean?
Cancer took it. Yeah, man.
Exactly. But I'm alive, thankfully. But yeah, so that cancer, which is so difficult to get rid of, right? It takes so much effort. These guys, their cancer is their own fucking... fedora tipping nice guy-ness, their own personality problems.
The supreme gentleman is what Elliot Rodger called himself.
Yeah, exactly. That superiority. You have all these this big tumor, this malignant tumor of problems, right? That you are just focusing on the fucking symptom, and you're gonna have to get like you're gonna have to change your fucking perspective on everything.
And it's gonna be intense and painful. Yeah,
exactly.
And it's gonna take a while.
It's gonna take a lot of like introspection, and they're not willing to do it.
Yeah, you need to realize what a piece of shit you are.
Yeah, exactly. You gotta realize that you're being a piece of shit.
Yeah.
To get that fucking chemo, but they won't do it. So what they do is they go on MRAs.
Dude, DMT fucking gave me that moment.
What?
That, like, you are being a piece of shit and you need to turn your life around moment.
It didn't work that well. You're still kind of a piece of shit.
That's true. I haven't smoked it in a while, but yeah. No, I mean, like, I was at fucking Aaron Wasserman's house, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was just smoking like little bits of DMT and meditating, trying to like grow control of the psychedelic process. Mm-hmm. And then like on my last hit, like, Aaron Watts, like, man, I'm not feeling it. I need to get some vodka in my system, you know, to make it happen. I'm like, all right, man. So I'm going to leave in a couple minutes. And I take that hit. And then, like, that was the one that the drug was like, you're coming along for the full fucking ride. And I could see, like, you know, like the fucking... like, it was like the framework, the vibrational electromagnetic framework of the universe coming out towards me.
Uh-huh.
And that I was opening up in the exact same way. And I'm going towards it, and it's coming towards me. And when we mesh as one, like, I am in the middle of everything. And I am in all information, all knowledge at once. And I, like, have a question forms. And like, the information is in my head, and it's just flooding me and going crazy. And, like, I was having really bad back problems at the time.
Yeah.
And, What it like the DMT or the fucking consciousness of the universe or whatever the fuck it was, like, it grabbed me while I was freaking out, and it said, do you feel how your back is right now? And I'm like, holy shit, yeah, I'm a human being named John Gregory. Let me go see how my back is. Oh my God, it feels amazing. The best I've ever felt it in years, in 10 years. And it was like, that is a result of your will, of your intent, of your free will, and your entire life. All of reality around you can be shaped by your will, by your intent. And I was just like, whoa. And I freaked out, and I wanted to get away from it. And I tried to swim away.
Yeah.
And it pulled me back. And it said, like, you need to understand this. Like, you need to understand how important your free will, like, how all your decisions, all your intent, like, matters so much. And it shapes your future, and it shapes everything about you. And then it let me back go. And I came back to Earth, and like, that was it for me. I had to make a change.
Wow, John Gregory, you took us for a ride on the Black and Jew podcast. That's amazing. That's...
yeah, I recommend everyone do DMT, and it is honestly the most terrifying thing in the world. There's no overcoming it. You're just going to have to face the terror and then become a better
person. Yeah, I mean, it shapes you through pain, you know? Like, that happened to me. That happened to me through getting cancer, too, you know? Like,
I have no doubt.
Yeah, like, I was... you know, it really made me way less neurotic. It changed my perspective on things, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it made me just enough of a dick to be a comedian, but not a total dick, you know? Like, you gotta be a little bit of a dick, but not too much, you know? Like, and, like, it gave me... It like, totally changed my perspective. And a lot, some of it, I think, I had to do with... you know, I was on all these, like, drugs when I was in the ICU, and, like, I was hallucinating really hard. At the time, I knew I was, but it was hard to get away from it. It was a very... most terrifying...
Did you have an out-of-body experience?
No, but okay. But like people that talk about that, I feel like they just aren't a lot of morphine. Because there was this one doctor, this like neurosurgeon that was like I died and I came back to life and I felt these butterflies. I was riding on the wings of consciousness and like cause he's like this really Christian guy and he's like I went to heaven and I came back to earth and I saw. I'm like, dude, you were just tripping. Like you're not like that. That's what that is. Like because yeah. If I would have been scared. If I had never experimented with drugs or anything, like I wouldn't have known what the fuck was going on, mm-hmm. you know. But I knew, I'm like, all right, this is just the drugs, like you know, this is not real, right? And like I still freaked out. It was the sheer terror, mm-hmm. you know, because like I was in like a coma for like I think 7 days or something like that.
Christ,
dude, yeah. So like that. So I was like you know coming down from it, I was like hearing like auditory hallucinations, like all these like hell on earth, right? Like I was freaking out, like I was like inconsolable, right? But you know, coming out of that and then going through all the cancer, and then I thought, like, I'm like, I didn't know anything about cancer treatment, so I'm like, oh, I think it's gonna be, so this is it, right? Like that was the worst thing ever, so now I can just move on. But it's like, oh no, actually, you got 6 more months. And then my dad was like, oh, we found a better protocol in pediatrics, and that's like 3.5 years. But I'm like, well, you got to go for the cure, you know? Like you got to go for the most effective fucking protocol. So that's what I did. But mm-hmm. that changed, like. Cause as a well off white guy in mm-hmm. America, I never really had an understanding about hardship at all. You know,
same here.
Yeah, so it's like if you have that, if you understand true strife and hardship, and you have that pain and you go through it, it makes your life afterwards so much better. You know?
Yeah, dude. I mean, I feel the exact same way. Like my mom died from cancer, but like, and there was like a period where. Like, I just ignored everything.
Yeah.
Like, I just totally bottled and repressed those feelings and just did not want to deal with it and just wanted to move on with my life. You know? Because I thought, like, that was the thing to do, you know? Yeah. That's how you move on, is you just fucking look ahead, you know? And mm-hmm. you just... And I went to FSU and I got all depressed and shit and then, like...
So, how old were you when that happened?
My mom died when I was 17.
Oh.
And I would say that... I didn't deal with it till I was 19.
Yeah.
And when I dealt with it, like it was, I didn't want to do anything. Like I didn't want to fucking go to class or like work out or eat or fucking anything. I stayed in my room for like 10 days. Didn't do anything. Like mm-hmm. just didn't leave my room for 10 days. And like came home. My dad, you know, gave me a job at his office, and then I discovered comedy, and I was terrible at it, and didn't do it again for a long time, but then did it again in fucking Forshaw, and Dave Williamson actually gave me some, like, oh, you know, you got some good material there, you know,
yeah.
This is only your second time, stick with it. I did that, and then before you know it, I did psychedelic drugs, and I had, a new lease on life, and, like, I was... good for the first time in my life with like my mom's death, you know, like putting that in fucking perspective.
And at 17, you know, you don't really have the emotional intelligence to deal with that. Cause I mean, it happened to me later in life. So like I could process it a lot better, mm-hmm. you know, like I know people that it's different, but people that get cancer when they're really young and they handle it a lot differently than I do. It's just a totally different situation, you know?
Well, I mean like the thing with my mom is like, she had cancer when I was in seventh grade.
Yeah.
And then she beat it. We thought, you know, and there were like all those years where everything was fine and my mom was healthy and she was herself again and she mm-hmm. and then fucking pneumonia happened. And somehow my mom knew right away. She knew like when we were like, this pneumonia's not going away. Let's go to the doctor. And she's like, I think the cancer's come back. And we were all like, oh my, come on. This is like too much, you know, you're just... like, this is pneumonia, let's see where... And then it's like, oh, you have a tumor in your lung. Oh, you have a tumor in your spine. You have a tumor in your kidney. You have a tumor in your liver. You know, you fucking... this shit has metastasized everywhere, you know? So, like, I was really hurting for a long time. Because, especially because going to Catholic school...
Of course,
and, like, believing in God. And, like, the idea that... something that people said a lot to me that I got really pissed off about is that God has a plan, you know,
this is all
part of God's plan. It's like, my mom fucking volunteered at Camilla's house and like fed the homeless. And that was part of God's plan to let her die in agony of cancer. Probably not, you know, probably not. So
unless he's a huge dick,
you know? Right. Unless he's just like, you know, it's like, They got one volunteer too many over at Camilla's house, you know? Like, fucking, like they don't need all these room mothers at the Catholic school that she's volunteering at, yeah, you know? Yeah. So that was probably not the case, I figured. And so once I understood that there's no plan, you know what I mean? There's just like genetics and life choices and shit like that. And my mom didn't know that, I don't know, that like she was predisposed to cancer and that certain foods and stuff, certain additives can exacerbate that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like knowledge of self and knowledge of the outside that like makes that all better, you know, and that's how you progress.
Yeah. It's difficult to go through that, man. I don't know what it's like to be on the other side of it, which I feel like in some ways is more difficult, you know, because like you're going through the physical pain yourself when you're in it, but then it's like you know what where you're at, you know.
Yeah.
So like you could be like, I feel like every week, but then the person from the outside is like, what the fuck is going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's shit, man. That's
yeah. I mean, like, you know, watching my mom, who'd always been like you know, like such a lady, you know, like always like a Southern lady, like in her dresses and shit, and always like, you know, looking good, and then seeing her fucking in this bed with all these tubes in her and you know, and like the doctor going like, you know, medical science has only come so far and it's only a matter of time, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And like, so I didn't want to deal with that at the time at all, you know, fucking 17.
Yeah. Like, and you don't know, like, how do you even, you don't have the tools to deal with that kind of thing at that age. Yeah.
So I just bottled that shit. And like the way it manifested itself was,
do you know why you're taught to bottle it? Feminists.
Oh, you women with your vaginas. But I just, what my brain was doing is I was bottling that shit as like physical tension. And I got really bad back problems as a result of that, you know? And it was only through psychedelic drugs and like self-realization that I could overcome my back problems and overcome like all the emotions that I repressed.
That's crazy how it manifested itself like that.
But it did, you know, that's something that people necessarily don't believe me on, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they're like, oh, you had back problems because you were tall, or your back got better. Your back got better because you lost weight, you know? And it's like, no, like, I would know if my back got better because I lost weight.
It's funny because this is obviously a lower magnitude, but the only time my back would hurt, right, is in recent memory, or pretty much my whole life, right, is when I started doing stand-up. I'd get really tense on stage, right? And my back would fucking kill me.
Yeah.
It would kill me. Because that's not...
Are you saying stress can lead to back pain? Mike?
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's funny because like even when someone massages you, like you can feel the tension, you know? And
It's for people literal to be, tension. Yeah, it's you know literal, what I mean? Yeah.
But people, you know, they don't think that's true.
No, it's so funny because like America didn't have back problems when America had ulcer problems in the 50s, you know, like people would get stressed and they would get heartburn.
Yeah.
And then people figured out, oh, the reason that your stomach is producing all this acid, the reason that you're getting peptic ulcers, the reason you're getting heartburn is because you're too stressed. And once you recognize that mechanism, it's no longer effective. It's no longer an effective way for your subconscious mind to distract your conscious mind from the real problems that are bothering you. And so, honestly, like most Americans went to back pain. And it's like people think like, oh, it's because we sit in these chairs all day, you know, or because we're at the computer. And it's like, no, because now that I understand where my back pain comes from, I can sit all fucking day. I can be at a computer all day and have no problems whatsoever.
I think you're making this all up, John.
No, but this guy, Dr. Sarno, he cured Howard Stern and fucking John Stossel of their back problems. So.
Is that's a book that you read, I think you recommend.
Yeah. The Mind Body Prescription.
Yeah, because my friend has the same problems, and I recommended it to him too. It's funny how people, they get skeptical when you say stuff like that. Like when you say the word holistic, right?
I know.
It's just like when you say the word free market, right?
right, when you say the word free market,
like there's all this
trust our corporate overlords.
Yeah, that's been fucking hijacked by these people that put all this other baggage on top. It's like, oh, you say free market? You must be a crazy Christian that hates gay people, you know? Even though it's like completely like
you must love Ayn Rand and corporations. Yeah. It's like, I fucking hate Ayn Rand. I hate when people bring up Ayn Rand to me. Like, I have nothing to do with that cunt. She was a crazy bitch who had like this whole sex cult, and like her whole idea that reality is objective I don't think reality is objective at all.
Yeah. But what was I saying before we went down that?
Sorry, man. I'm drunk.
Don't worry about it.
You're talking about Holistic and how your friend...
oh, yeah, because they hijack it. So you hear Holistic and you think like... And you think like fucking someone who thinks that weed can cure cancer with no evidence, Christ. You know?
Yeah,
when,
yeah,
and
yeah.
The fact is, it's like that's a... And I noticed the shortcomings when it comes to medicine... being treated by these amazing oncologists, right? Mm-hmm. They're great at curing cancer. They're great at this evidence, but it's just like, that's what they do. And like, there's very little thought or very little discussion given to like, what other parts of your life, like it's a marginal thing. It's like, what other parts of your life can we change to make your life better?
Uh-huh.
It's just like Western medicine, I think, has a big shortcoming with that, right? That is like,
totally.
You know, you're just like, let's fucking solve the problem. But let's not try to find the solution to it in the first place. Well, and like, let's just give a magic bullet of medicine. Like, what can I prescribe? You know, it's
right,
not like what
this
life changes can
cures
you
cures cancer. You yeah, know, yeah. As opposed to like, oh, you need to be this way. You need to do this. You yeah. know? No, because it's like the whole thing that I think Western medicine is too focused on like individual organs or individual tissues instead of looking at everything as like a system, you
That's
know?
True, yeah.
Because like everything focused, like for example, like I think doctors today are too focused on pharmacology and not enough on nutrition, you know?
Yeah, of course. Like, yeah, yeah.
And like that's such a huge, because people think that of food as like fuel, like you're throwing a log into the fire. But the truth is food becomes you. You know what I mean? Like that is the fucking atoms and molecules that make up your body. You know?
Yeah.
Like that is information that you are sending to every cell in your entire body on what to do, what it cannot do.
You even make nutrition sexy and trippy. That's true, dude.
Well, dude, psychedelics teach you that like, everything is everything, man. Like the oneness of the universe is like the oneness of everything. That like all is, I don't know how to say it, man. I'm not high right now, but like just the idea.
Yeah.
Fractals is what I'm saying, basically.
Fractals, man. Evolution. Wake up, people. Robin
Wake
Williams.
Wake up, sheeple.
Robin Williams. Fractals.
Michael J. Fox. He's faking it.
I think that's a good point. Like one of my doctors was just like he casually mentioned to my mom. He's like, oh, some news. Like, because there's a bunch of doctors in the clinic, and he's like, oh, yeah, some new studies have shown that, like, you know, exercise is really important for
life.
Not just life, but like making sure you don't relapse with cancer, you know,
sure.
to stay in remission. And it's like, that shouldn't just be like, oh, by the way, this study, that should be like a big deal, you know?
That should be a part of your treatment. Walk once in a while, you know?
Yeah, right. Like, they'll say, like, you know, oh, don't eat fucking. Like, don't eat fucking, you know, a bunch of fat because you might get pancreatitis because this thing's high, or like, don't do this. But it's not like I don't get this whole nutrition, like this guide to fucking what to eat, you know, like, and that's so fucking important.
Right. Because like the truth is that, you know, your body manifests tumors all the time and that your body puts them down the time, you know? And so some mechanism is failing that is supposed to keep the tumors in check. And it would make a lot of sense if that mechanism was failing because of poor nutrition, you know, that your body wasn't getting the right tools that it needs to keep cancer in check.
Yeah, that's true. This has been a very, this has been a fucking,
I've just been paralyzed by interest. Honestly, like, thank you for this podcast episode. Like, this is a really good episode and you touched a bunch of points.
Yeah, and I'm pretty drunk too. So
okay,
yeah.
That also helps.
So give a libertarian some whiskey, and you're not going to think the same way about minimum wage again.
Let me tell you about Hillary Clinton.
All right, I think we might have to make this a two-parter. All right, guys, so you want to wrap it up?
Let's wrap it up.
Let's do it. All right, guys, so where can the people find you, John Gregory?
On Twitter, if they must, at... John Gregory JR. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook, and that shit's public. Just whatever, you know.
I like that sigh. I feel like that sigh that you just did before I read anything on Facebook from you. I picture you sighing like that.
That's appropriate.
Yeah, you're just a big sigh. Your life is a big sigh. What about you, Reggie?
Well, currently you can probably find me starting up the Church of John Gregory. I'm gonna stand on that soapbox, have a big picture of him. Iconography of John Gregory. And also you can find me on Twitter and at @ Ratchet_Reggie.
And you can find me at Mike Marion. Wait, let me sigh first. At Mike Marinoff. I won the best Twitter, whatever. Or it's facebook.com/Mike Marinoff comedy.
Love right. and anarchism.
And I'll be hosting Tuesday night, which should be tonight because I'm releasing, we're recording Monday, I'm releasing. So yeah, Tuesday night, I'm going to be at Dada's hosting with Mike Citron, at Mike Citron's show. So come out.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, come on out.
And also, hey guys, Skeletons Wins premiering on the 26th of September at the Coral Gables Art Cinema. Yours truly will be there. Mike might be there. We'll see. And I'm just going to tell them over the podcast. I want John Gregory to be there. I was actually going to ask you before you blew my mind, so don't worry.
Just keep that shit bottled up, all right? Let's dick jokes only, please. All right, guys. Until next time.
See ya.